I was one of my
We're
first
on the air.
First time ever that I had a chat on your chat room. There was no chat room.
Okay, I got him. The chat room is open now.
I was going to say hi. Hey. I'm homesick.
I'm sorry you're homesick.
Kind of fun. Listening to you know, the voices you can hear.
Yeah, Russ in the past has collected the propane.
Never mind. I gave it to the lady in charge.
He's not here today.
He doesn't seem to be here right now.
We were thinking maybe we can get the message.
Sorry about that.
20 to 9, there was only about 5.
So when you get on the when you get on the website, then what do you do?
My website?
I'm on San Carlos Computer Club.
So what would you do? What are you looking for?
Talking about the chat
room. Oh, the chat room? There should be a link right there from the first one. Just, yeah.
What's this login? It doesn't do anything.
Login. Oh, that's for administrators.
Oh, administrator.
Yeah.
Well, you just put admin there. I've been pounding on it for a week trying to get it.
Just hit the chat room button.
Wow, that's quite a record.
Scott, what is
And then this is the software down here.
What is your email that works?
You could write to scott@internationalcs.net. Or I also have Hotmail, Yahoo, Google. Any of those would work.
You Scott also, at Hotmail.com?
No, at Hotmail it would be international_CS. The English spelling or the American spelling? Or
international.
Underscore. You know that line, underline?
Yeah.
CS for computer solutions at Hotmail.com. That's a pretty common one for me. I've had it for years. But you could always use my domain appropriate, which is scott@internationalcs.net. That's like our official business domain email.
Scott,
hey, Bob, why don't I just give you my business card?
Yeah.
That's a good idea, because I have you. I have you, and I've sent you stuff.
There you go.
I sent you stuff, and I wanted to get a hold of you once. Couldn't do it.
Yeah?
Didn't go through. I don't know what's wrong. I've got to have the address wrong.
Okay.
It must be wrong. Yeah. It must be wrong.
No video in this? Just chat?
No.
Oh, my gosh. Video? We're sharing internet here with the whole restaurant. Look how full this place is.
High def 3D.
That's right. High def 3D.
Or 4K.
Stereo.
It's not even stereo. I think I've got it as
Dolby.
40 kilobits a second. It's probably mono going out two channels.
Which is fine.
Well, this is it. This is the time. Maybe we should start.
Go for it.
What do you guys think? Should we start?
Yes.
Why not?
All right.
Oh, I think he's got a question.
A question right off the bat.
Three questions on Roku.
On Roku. Okay, well, give me a second to introduce ourselves. This is the San Carlos Computer Club, and I'm Scott Stimson, and I see all familiar faces here. It's good to see you all. Thanks for coming. We meet every Tuesday from 9:15 to 10:15 and try and help each other out, answer the questions that people have about technology that kind of directly affects us here in Mexico as retired gringos. I've come with a few topics, and I'm happy to take questions from people, but I wanted to do a little follow-up first, and the chat room is on. So if somebody's out there listening and has something to add, they can add. I wanted to ask very quickly, has anybody noticed anything with Netflix? VPN issues, nothing like that? Bob, no Netflix VPN issues?
I have Netflix now.
Yeah? So it's all working again?
I've learned all about speed and buffering and let's see.
I just haven't turned mine on.
You turned yours on?
No, I haven't.
You haven't turned what on?
Netflix.
Oh, you're not a Netflix user.
Well, I am, but I rarely.
Rarely, okay.
And also, I've learned about Mock TV.
Okay. Yeah.
It's working perfect. So if any of you want a subscription, we haven't filled our 10 yet.
Haven't sold your what?
Huh?
Yes. Oh, yeah, okay.
Mock TV?
Mock TV.
Like $16 a month?
Roku, live American channels, like 200 channels, ABC, NBC, it's a lot.
I've got a Mac 254. I get 900 channels, but I don't need Bangladesh.
This is all American channels, all the sports channels. All
I get all of that, but it's just not working.
Well, the reason I asked, just to remind people, is because Netflix has come out with a public statement saying they're going to help start cracking down on these people using VPNs to access the United States to watch their content.
Hulu does that, I think.
Hulu does that religiously. They've done that from the beginning. The BBC does that to keep you out of being able to watch their shows in England. CBC does that in Canada so that you're not able to watch their presentations from Mexico. And so this is, I mean, we know they have to take that public position, but we don't know actually how that's going to affect us, because their even more public position is we're fighting for licensing globally. And the idea is to get global licensing for all this content, so this is not an issue in the future. But they have publicly stated that they're going to start helping crack down on the people using VPNs to get at the Netflix service.
I still access Hulu with DNS. It doesn't block it.
Right, and that's the same kind of things that they would be trying to block. And what we found with Hulu is certain VPNs have become so well known with the Hulu servers that it gets really hit or miss whether you can see their content across the VPN.
He's got Hide My Ass, and as soon as you hit the Hulu channel, it says you've got to use a proxy.
Oh, okay. Yeah, so maybe the Hide My Ass would be better suited to try another geolocation, another pool of IP addresses. You could test that easy enough by using the Hide My Ass app in your computer, because the app allows you to flip between different points to connect to. So you could connect to Arizona, try Hulu. If you get a message saying, it looks like you're using a VPN, you could try going to Oregon and seeing if you can get Hulu and see if the message changes. Go to California, go to Colorado, go to New York. Because they're not tracking all the IPs that are possible through the VPN, but they're very close to being able to. And, I mean, at some point, Hulu would be able to say internally, we've shut down Hide My Ass. They can't get to us. We've got all their IPs cataloged. And hopefully Hide My Ass is working just as hard to make sure that's not the case.
I have a question. I have Hide My Ass, and I use it on my internet, on my computer.
Mm-hmm.
But when I run Netflix on the TV, does it go through that too?
Only if you have the TV going through a router that's using the Hide My Ass service.
Well, yeah. I only have one router.
Right. Most of us have one router. Some of us have more than one. But if you've got the Prodigy router, if that's the one you're referring to, from Telmex,
yeah.
So that doesn't have the capability of supporting a VPN. So for you to provide a VPN to, say, like a smart TV, then you would need to get an additional router that's dedicated to creating that VPN connection. Yeah.
So I'm stuck with Mexican Netflix.
Well, unless you want to pay for a $100 router and have it set up with your Hide My Ass service.
Or you can put it on your computer and then put an HDMI hookup up to your TV.
That's also another solution, is that you could stream whatever's on your computer to the TV set. It's a solution to a different question, but it results in the same experience.
The advantage of Cloakbox is to bypass the computer.
Now, the Cloakbox that Chester's referring to is one of these VPN services with equipment. And people that have Ytopia, they refer to their VPN routers as Cloakboxes. It was sold at branded Cloakbox. Mm-hmm. But one of the advantages of Hide My Ass is you're already paying for that service. So you really just need to add a router and have it set up for the service, and it doesn't cost you any additional money.
And again, what Mike's saying is
another very, very doable
router, right?
For like $35, right? You could add a Chromecast to your TV set.
I have a Chromecast, it just never has worked.
Right. Well, you should be able to do Chromecast through using your HMIA, your Hide My Ass connection. So if you're able to look at it through Chrome on your Netflix through Chrome on your computer, then you can use Chromecast to cast it to your TV set.
And I also have my TV set hardwired to the router.
Well,
PAPAOIA TV service through the MAG 254.
I suspect if it's sitting on the same network, it's not an issue. If what would need to work for the Chromecast to work would be for your laptop and the Chromecast to share the same Wi-Fi network. So if something about your setup with the IPTV box that you're using requires a different set of IP addresses, then that's probably where you're having a problem using the Chromecast. Does that help?
I got it first, and the screen came up and everything, but I just never could figure out how to make it work.
Well, it definitely does work. In if it's not working, it may be some very specific issues, like the way you've got your IPTV box hooked up. But it should work. It should work without needing an additional router.
So then, anything I get on my computer, I can send over to
the TV. Right, you just zip it over to the TV set using the Chrome web browser. Anything that's in a browser tab has the ability to be cast to a Chromecast. And it's actually up in the tab itself. It has the commands for how to do it. And you know, an interesting thing, I mentioned before, we got our TV set, the one we bought through Amazon.com.mx. All right, 60-inch TV set. I paid $4 more than if I had bought it in the States and carted it across the border with me. Came right to my door here in Mexico.
Yeah, that's strange because I've checked that on Mexico Amazon. It was like $3,000.
For what?
For 16-inch, you're talking about Samsung?
You mean for shipping?
No, the total was $3,000. And 175,000 pesos, which turned out to be about...
No. The TV I got. Remember, Chester, my economic level. Okay, I got a 15,000. I got a 15,000 peso TV.
I sure couldn't find it.
Yeah, it was a Samsung 60-inch. It was 14,999 pesos with free shipping.
My second, it was 178,000 pesos.
No.
They saw you coming, Chester.
Yeah.
I saw you coming.
So,
it depends on what kind of a car you drive.
What I was going to mention about the Samsung Smart TV is it's got screen mirroring built right into it. And it just blew me away because I'm like watching my daughter watch YouTube videos on this. My 8-year-old is watching YouTube videos on the TV. I haven't showed her how to do it. I'm like, what are you doing? She's like, I'm watching YouTube videos. I'm like, yeah, but how are you doing it? It's like, oh, off my tablet.
Yeah.
Like, how'd you do it off your tablet? And she's like, oh, well, it just pops up in YouTube, Poppy. You just press this button in YouTube, and now they're on the TV. I'm like, really?
Maybe she should be teaching you that.
So she's volunteered to come in and take over for Computer Club one of these days. We'll have an 8-year-old tell us how to do things.
That's what I do. I go to the grandchildren.
I have a question about TV, since you're talking about TVs.
Okay, Bob, can I hold that? We will get you next, but let me get on to one other topic that's related to this. I didn't get a chance to mention this last week, but I did want to mention, we had talked a lot about screen mirroring using a Roku. And that's the idea of casting this stuff to the TV set. And I found the documentation for it. I think, Ed, you were the one that was telling us about it. Is that right?
Yeah.
So if you have a Roku model 4, 3, or 2 with software that's version 5, 6, or newer, then inside the settings... Oh, and it's also in the streaming stick. Inside the settings, you can turn on screen mirroring. And this will become a resource that you can cast to.
Where do you want to cast?
Well, there's also an app in the App Store for Android for your cell phone.
Click it again.
And
it comes up.
It's for Samsung.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so you just download the app. And then you can put all your pictures and everything right on the TV.
What?
You can do a party thing. You know, like you're having a party, and you can do the music, all the music out of your cell phone and everything, right on the television.
How are you doing, Linda? It's good to see you back.
Doing good.
So, well, the Roku is, I think, specifically for PC streaming. Is that right, Ed? You were talking about it.
We just got a brand new Kindle last night, just a 8.9, the newer Fire HD. And it's, if you go into settings, you'll see display, and it'll say mirror casting or whatever they call it on there. I can't remember.
Okay.
And your iTablets are supposed to have it, so you probably go into your settings and look up display, and you'll see mirror casting or screen share or whatever.
It might even be under AirDrop. I really don't know. But you know how they bring up the Bluetooth option there for sharing between iDevices? I wouldn't be surprised if you saw it there.
It worked great with the Kindle last night. We had just gotten it.
This is in the Roku. If you have a Roku and you want to try and get what's on your screen of your mobile device or your PC onto your TV, there's a good chance all you have to do is turn this on. It's under settings, under system, and there's an option that says screen mirroring beta, and you just turn it on, and then the Roku broadcasts on your network that it's a display ready to be used.
One caveat, it doesn't like Windows 10.
I saw that.
Oh.
I saw that in the Roku documentation. And it is in beta. They said it's in beta, and all their instructions are referring to Windows 8 is the highest version, or 8.1 is the highest Windows version.
So along with what Ed said, if you have this, you don't need an HDMI cord on the Kindle to go to the TV.
Well, the Kindle supports it. That's what you said?
Yeah.
So Mike's question is, you don't need a cable from the Kindle to the TV.
No.
You can just
You need a dongle or a smart TV.
You need a Roku.
Okay.
If you've got a Roku, that's either the stick, Roku 2, Roku 3, or Roku 4. Okay. And then the software for the Roku has to be version 5.6 or higher, which all of them are compatible with. And if you don't have the latest software, it's because you've done something to turn off automatic updates. Because it should be updating itself automatically.
It should be around 7 right now, I think. Update 7.
Oh, yeah? I haven't paid it. I've got an ancient Roku, so it's done updating. I don't have any of the latest software.
Speaking of Rokus, can you measure the test on a Roku, or do you have to measure the test on your computer to see speed test, download speed test?
There's a way to do it. If you go on the internet and do Roku speed test, it'll tell you how to get into that function.
I wonder if there's even a Roku app for speed testing. I've never looked.
I never have either.
I mean, it seems like a natural fit to build a small app for testing speed.
If it works, you got good enough speed.
I bought a. I bought an EasyCast because of the Windows 10 not working with my Roku. I paid $13 for Hong Kong or China, one of those places.
Yeah.
And it'll mirror cast your computer and. But it's really terrible.
Oh, it's choppy?
It's just, it will not, it takes over your internet. I mean, like, my home internet is Casa Hudson. And when I log into this EasyCast, it takes over that, the internet routes through the EasyCast somehow, and it just absolutely kills the speed. You can't download, if you can download a movie to your computer, and it casts beautifully.
Right.
But if you try to download something live off
Extreme something.
It won't.
I've never worked with this EasyCast. I only became aware of it a few weeks ago when I was surfing Amazon.com.mx, and then Ed brought it up a couple of weeks ago. And that was the only background I had on it, was what I found in the Amazon catalog.
It doesn't have good reviews.
Okay.
That's one thing I didn't do when I saw it. I got excited because it was $13.
Bob, let's go back. What was your TV question that you were going to ask?
Okay, Linda helped me out. We were looking at my tube TV and decided that maybe, like Ed said, that I should upgrade from this big TV that's working perfectly.
Oh,
Ed said that it wasn't very good. The pixels weren't enough or something like that. It was a little bit blurry. And so I was talking with Bill, and Bill said, LCTV that is a Roku TV?
TCL.
TCL, thank you. And it's a Roku TV for a very, very good price. Is there anything wrong with Roku TV?
I've never gotten to use one. Has anybody gotten to use it? They started offering their software to be put in smart TVs, I think, 2 years ago. But I haven't seen one yet.
It's a TCL smart TV. I think the price was $279 for a 40-inch.
Yeah, that sounds reasonable.
That's a good price.
Target.
You could take $100 off that for a Roku.
I got $179
right?
31-inch.
Yeah, that's pretty good. Well, and the way I feel about smart TV is that's a great price for a monitor.
You're laying in bed and you're at the drive-in. And it was $99 to watch this. And it turned out to be a smart TV, which I didn't care about.
I don't think anybody should care about smart TV. I mean, there's some cute stuff that bells and whistles, kind of like having extra buttons in the new car you bought. But in the end, you got to drive down the road. You got to be able to get from one place to another and carry the stuff that matters.
You try out all the buttons and then you ignore it.
Right.
I have another question. If we finish there.
Sure, sure.
Okay, yesterday, something weird started happening where
just watch for the
I could
sales.
Receive emails,
they're out there.
But I couldn't send them out. And it kept saying untrusted connection.
Untrusted connection.
Like you, I've got
with poor CSI reputation, original
was dropped. It was extremely expensive.
Everyone
bought it.
Right.
It's got to be 20
it,
years old. It's got
to
weigh 200 pounds.
Right.
Nobody
nothing
wants it.
Right.
You can't get rid of it.
And it was working just fine until it wasn't working.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, it's, yeah, it was working just fine down here in the same circumstance. It was just like the next day it stopped sending out.
It's like with the VCR and all the tapes.
Well, you might, because what you're describing sounds like you don't have a secure, an SSL connection to your sending server.
You still use it?
And the only reason...
Satellite, I guess.
Well, we're talking about your email service provider server. So it doesn't matter where you are on the internet. What matters is your connection to your service. And what you're describing is the kind of error you get when you're not making an encrypted connection to that server. Now, I'm just speculating, but maybe what's happened, your email provider has upped their security.
Yeah.
And you have new instructions for how to set up the sending portion. That's the only other thing I would think is you're having problems that aren't actually related to email. Oh, because they're two separate services. Yeah, and you've already, when you're receiving email, you've already satisfied a level of security and possibly encryption on that end. But older configurations, we used to not care about encryption sending. And what you're describing sounds like that kind of scenario where they've just bumped up their security level.
Okay, so I'm getting my emails across my original emails from home, right, from Canada, but my emails out here. So
well, you're on the internet down here using your same device to connect to your email provider in Canada. And you're successfully receiving the emails from them, but you're not able to send out using them.
So call them and talk to them.
Well, you may need to double check your sending settings in your email program.
What would I look for in there?
Well, like I was saying, it would probably be encryption settings, it would probably be SSL settings and port settings. And you may call them, in my experience,
the right ones.
Yeah, you want to get the right settings and then double check that you've got them set correctly.
Because I've had to do that.
If they match up, if you're running with the same settings and you're still having this issue, then I would guess that you're having a computer issue that's not related to email specifically. There's some general computer issue, like your hard drive's got a bad sector on it, you're having problems with the memory in your computer. Something is glitched to make it not run. Yeah, Mike.
Back to Roku. Can you use your computer as your monitor instead of the TV?
With Roku? That's a great question. I don't think you can. I don't think there's a way to do that.
Because the HDMI thing on the computer just sends stuff out and doesn't take things in?
I don't believe that Roku, the device, acts as a server. It's always acting as a client. It's always acting as a place to go, not a place to come from.
Okay.
It's just the nature of the product.
Yeah. Yeah. Easy to do, just plug it in.
What's that?
Just plug it in.
Yeah, but if you were to plug it into a computer, you wouldn't expect Roku to come out of the monitor.
Okay.
And that's what he's asking, is if it's possible to get what's coming out of the Roku on his computer monitor.
I thought about that, too. I just haven't ever done it.
Yeah, I mean, you could do some crazy stuff. Like, you could hook a webcam to the front of your TV set. You could
just to test if it's better.
You could come up with a video streamer like they use for YouTube. Like, you have YouTube streaming now where you can turn on your webcam and you can broadcast. So you could come up with a device like a GoPro and plug with the HDMI cable right into the GoPro, something like that. But just out of the box, I don't know of any way to do that.
Okay.
Does anyone here have the newest version of the Telmex modem?
Yeah.
The one that's not the little white box?
The
outputs, Cat5 outputs does it have?
It has four, but then it also has, which is different from the previous devices, it has a fifth one intended for an input, intended for like an internet connection. And it would be used to bypass the DSL connection. So you'd actually find like five jacks on the back of it for Ethernet. Four of them would be yellow and one is gray. And that gray one you're not using because you're actually using a telephone line instead. And then there's also a USB port on there, too, if you wanted to plug in a printer or a hard drive to share. Yeah. They're just some of the new features in the device that Telmex is offering you guys.
Is it capable of picking up a stronger or faster signal than that?
It actually is. Yeah, that new... If you're living in an area, like Jim's not here right now, but he's got like the ideal area. He's right at the end of a line of fiber optic, right within the distance on the switch in that area. He's getting upwards of 15 to almost 20 megabits a second.
That's what I get.
And you can't get that with the old equipment.
That's what I get, 15. Yeah.
But there's a lot of places around town that it just doesn't matter. And Gary, I'm afraid your place is one of those places. And Robin, I'm afraid your place is one of those problems. And Dag, your place is one of those places.
It's called Tech-A-Line.
Yeah, it's Tech-A-Line. They all happen to live in the same place. And Jim's frustrates me because he lives two blocks away from me in the Ranchitos, farther away. And the fiber optics runs down the street in front of us.
But he's up higher.
Well, he's closer to the termination. The fiber optics runs down the street, and there's a circuit right at the end of the run, and everybody's hooked up to that run, including us, which goes all the way back to the run, that length. They're not cutting fiber and putting a new circuit on my street, so we get 8 to 10 megabits a second.
Are you getting that kind of speed?
8 to 10. That's all I'm getting. And I went into Telmex the other day to see if anything's changing. It changed recently.
Last night.
Do you have one of those?
What's that?
I had 0.62 last night. This morning I had 7.
Yeah.
Well, you can watch, look at your Facebook and text form.
You know, if you get less than 5, you can report it.
I've been over there all the time.
Yeah. You can call them on the phone and report it. Have you had a guy come out and work with you?
Five times.
Okay.
I have another question about it.
Sure.
I've never
never belonged to Facebook because I've heard so many people or so many things about it. But what's your opinion of it, and is there any cautionary?
Can't hear.
Facebook. I've never belonged to Facebook, so I'm asking you, what is your opinion about belonging to Facebook, or cautions about belonging to Facebook, or things I should know before I venture in?
Be careful what you put out there.
Don't put any personal, confidential information because it'll be there forever.
Yeah.
You don't mind probably knowing how old you are, then don't put that.
probably the one thing that I would say, and this is true in all corners of the internet, is what you do is public.
That's right.
Just keep that in mind when you do anything on the internet, is that there is no secrecy. Even we talk about encryption and safe places. That at some point that all breaks down. At some, because of the very nature of the network, it was intended to be public. It was what makes it stable. And so everything that we've done to secure information is an afterthought. It's an after the fact. Here's a scheme for making it secure. It lays on top of a public scheme. And so I would apply that kind of thinking to anything you do on the internet. Just be prepared for what you share to be public.
But let me respond to this question. I enjoy it every morning.
Mm-hmm.
There are all kind of YouTube friends that post. I don't post. I just enjoy watching all of my friends post.
It's sort of like reading
a
newspaper.
Yeah, it's like reading the
newspaper. And you get to see what your friends and family are doing. It's an easy a media for exchanging pictures and videos. So you get to be part of that conversation. But if privacy is your concern, then you should have that concern in every corner of the internet.
It can be invasive, though. I had a photograph taken while I was out for lunch with a bunch of women about 3 years ago. And the lady who posted it said, you know, it was out with Ray and da 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 da. And I still get remarks on this stupid photo from people that I haven't heard from in years. And where were you? And did you have a good time? So it can be invasive.
And as Facebook has grown, everybody has had to learn how to behave on Facebook. And another yours is a great example.
It shows up.
We went through a period of time where we were being asked to tag people's faces, and then that became inappropriate to tag people's faces because people didn't appreciate there being a whole collection of their faces out there.
Sometimes they got it wrong.
Yeah.
Well, and there were, I watched as groups of people would come up with their own schemes for tagging, where they would tag the family dog as their face, or they would tag a potted plant as their face, because they liked the obscurity. They felt more secure in the obscurity. The truth is, Facebook has an amazing facial recognition algorithm, and regardless of tagging potted plants or pets, what you need to be concerned about are things like posting pictures of the protest rally. Because the picture of the protest rally gets run through the same facial recognition algorithm, and people are identified in the background. And that information can be collected and stored and gathered and used in investigative purposes. And so it's become very uncool to post pictures like that in that media.
I describe it as fun.
Yeah.
Yes. Yes.
I was looking through
Facebook one day
last week, and
that's
I saw a picture that was dated in April 1984. My family, my dad, my mom, all my brothers and sisters, everybody. But
I used to
realize I was.
I think it's a matter of. I think it's a matter of how much information you put out there.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. When you get to know people too well, then it becomes dangerous. I once saw a little sign that said, "Welcome everyone. Welcome all my friends. Relatives by appointment only."
That went well.
You've been to my house.
Oh, really?
I got a rock right there as you walk in the door. It says the very same thing.
That's where I saw it.
Well, yeah, as far as Facebook goes, I mean, use your best judgment of whether you want to be involved in it. It's like a family newsletter. It's like a community newsletter. It's about as secure We think of there being thousands of leaflets of the same information out there for anybody to look at and gather, anybody that you're not suspecting to be able to look at.
I think there's no escape.
Yeah.
There's ways to block the public from looking at your...
Well, sure, but in the end, it's still... Yeah, I mean, all it takes is...
How important are you?
How, like, you can imagine that characters like J-Lo or some of these, Brad Pitt, they can't just casually use Facebook because they post something on their family and one of their followers grabs it and reposts it. The whole world has a copy of it. And that's as close to secure as you are.
I'd like to give an example of something that does disturb me a little bit. Let's say I go into Amazon and I'm looking... Then I go over to Facebook and there it is.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay, I need somebody to take over for a second. This is Scott.
In other words, no matter if I'm shopping on the internet anywhere, and then I go to Facebook, and over on the right hand corner is all the things I've been looking for.
Yeah.
That's kind of scary.
Yeah.
For a month, so marketing.
Yeah. Yes.
Of course it is. Now, by the way, all my cookies.
Yeah, it's
cool. And it doesn't go away.
Those are
good. But that's the way they make their money. That's the way that
show off.
Those are targeted online advertising. You go to our website or
you better go incognito.
And those cookies have information, right? Knowing what you're looking for. And when you go to a website, they can turn it into an advertisement. Specifically, how do they know what I'm looking for?
Right. Everybody needs a certain amount of
the type of information that's right there.
So if it's a rainy day, you've got nothing to do. You want entertainment.
You have to set cookies somewhere. What to do because they want a book and so much as you want about them. Lose access to.
I don't have a photograph.
I find that more websites are asking for more information.
Sorry. It was another important call. It wasn't the one I was expecting, but it was as important. I've got some international consulting group that's approaching me to do work for them here in Mexico. We're haggling over pricing right now because I don't think they're offering me enough money.
They might get your daughter to work cheaper.
That's right. They could. Mike, I've often told people if you really need 200 pesos worth of help, I'll give you 200 pesos worth of help, but I bet you're going to need more.
Can I ask?
Yes, Ed. Yeah.
Okay, when I bought this computer in Puerto Vallarta, it came with... Windows 8 single language. So I took it to a computer store there and they put a
language packet in it.
No, they dropped it back to 7.
Oh.
And was an unauthorized copy. Well, the other day I found a Windows 10 on the eBay. And I updated to Windows 10 before I checked my Roku streaming.
Okay.
Is there any way I can go back to 8.1?
You can get a hold of, and I would make sure I got a secure version of Windows 8.1 or 8, whichever you prefer. Get it from a reliable source, but you don't have to buy it. The registration code should be embedded in the laptop. And so all you have to do is install it, and it should activate itself. If it doesn't, it should just be a couple of clicks to get it activated, because that was the model for 8 and going forward with 10. Is that the registration code is provided by the manufacturer in the BIOS. So all you need is the install media.
So where would I find a good copy of 8.1?
I have one.
You have one? Yeah.
No, I've upgraded to 10.
You should be able to use a retail version of 8. From what I understand, you should be able to use any copy of 8 you get a hold of to do it.
I want to go back to 8.1 so I can screencast.
Yeah. Well, and when they finally work it out for 10, you can easily upgrade to 10 from 8.1. So
they'll have a way for you.
Yeah. You said you got a copy of 10 off eBay. Did you buy that?
Yeah, it was like $20.
Oh, okay.
Came with the license.
Oh, great.
From Spain.
From Spain.
Spain.
Well, and as far as the language issue, in 10, the language packs are included for free. And so we have customers that buy computers here at Sam's Club or Walmart, and they want them in English, and it's just a matter of installing the right language pack and switching it over.
It's available within the computer.
Right, yeah. Well, actually, the pack has to be downloaded and installed from Microsoft, but it's all part of it. In 7, we had to hack them.
Yeah.
Yeah, because the capability existed in 7, but they handicapped it in the home versions. And they were only readily available in the professional versions. And then in 8, it gets a little screwy because they use the same language package system as 10. There hasn't been a good hack for it. There's... You have to go into the registry and set a couple of things to make it do it. But it's still possible in 8. But in 10, they've just given up on trying to control that altogether. Which is in their best interest, yeah, because you look at the Mac platform and it's been multi-language forever.
Forever.
Yeah. Going to the Mac for a moment, or Apple in general, have you guys heard about this Air 53 error?
No.
So... There's this error that is affecting people after the last system update. And this is relatively recent information because we just had a system upgrade to iOS 9.2.1. And what happened was certain people got their iPhone operating system upgraded, and then they couldn't get into the phone. And it would boot up, and it would say error 53, and it would go into what's called a reboot loop, where it would sit there for a while, and it would restart the phone again, and it would end up with the same error, and the phones were useless. They're bricked. It turns out, Apple, we've known this for a while, has in silicon a secure system for its security parts, its webcam, its fingerprint ID, It's voice recognition. Now I'm starting to make stuff up because I can't tell. But there's a list of things that are all involved in securing an iDevice. And in their chip, they have a system for verifying that it is the correct device connected to the correct device.
Some deal going down.
I guess so, yeah. There's some hot stuff happening down there.
Linda's on doing some side deals.
Yeah. So in this case, what it is a fingerprint reader. And what's happened, and this will affect any of you that have iPhones or iPads that are fairly recent with the fingerprint reader.
It doesn't work with seniors.
To the bone.
The problem will exist regardless of whether you use the fingerprint reader. And what has happened is they've brought in the iPad or iPhone to have the screen fixed because it's broken. And they brought it to a third party, like a shop in Wymouth, or like to my shop, if you brought it to my shop. And they've replaced the screens and connected the thumbprint reader. And they've gone about their merry way. They're using their device. Then they upgrade to this latest version of Apple. I mean, like, they could have had the screen replaced 3 months ago. But this new upgrade that came out last month renders their phone useless. And it's because the fingerprint reader is not married to the device correctly. It does not have that secure relationship, that signature between it and the rest of the device. So Apple is saying that this has been caused because it's a third party. They should have taken it to Apple to be fixed. Apple's the only one authorized to make this marriage. And so it's been a heated debate in the tech community right now whether this is intentional or contrived, whether this is a security feature, or whether this is It sounds like a Microsoft thing from the past. Whether it's an Apple thing that's trying to guarantee who's fixing their equipment. Well, Apple has caught so much flack about it. Their official stance now is it was an accident. completely an accident. We never wanted anybody to have these kinds of problems with it. They pushed out 9.2.1 again. Right, but a fix normally would be like 9.2.2. Right, this is 9.2.1 in brackets again with the fix. And with the fix, your device works completely. No problems. Except the fingerprint reader, because you didn't have that done by Apple. Now, on a side note with that, have you paid attention to what's going on with unlocking the iPhone?
Oh, yes.
Okay, that's big news right now.
I'm on Apple's side on that.
You are? Okay. Before we pick sides.
We already have.
Yeah, I know you already have. I know you guys well. I've picked sides too. But there are some things that people don't understand. And I wanted to make it clear that the FBI has lots of information on this phone. Because Apple willingly gives up all the information that has been synchronized with their servers. So that means they've got most of the up-to-date, most all the information off of this phone to begin with. Yeah. What they are missing is the ability to get at what resides internally in the phone and the iMessages, which are encrypted between the phone and the iMessage service. These are about the only two aspects of data that are unattainable by the FBI right now. And most experts agree anybody that was a terrorist would not be relying on these two aspects for doing...
A mute question.
Right.
No, really, it doesn't matter.
The other thing that people aren't aware of is he had three phones, burned two of them. This is his work phone that he did not destroy.
So you know that.
Probably. It seems very unlikely a terrorist would use their work phone to do work. More likely, he'd use a literal burner phone, like one of the ones that was burned up. And so what that leads us to speculate on is the FBI using this
as a means.
When they say back door, they're not talking about a back door to the device. They're talking about a backdoor to the legislation that they're trying to pass to make a backdoor into everybody's phone.
Yeah. Setting a precedent.
That's right. Yep. And so it's very important that we understand what's going on when we're thinking about these things, because they will not give the phone to Apple to open for them. They want Apple to give them a tool to open it up. And that's what we're arguing about.
Well, there was somebody, I can't remember who, said that they would hack the phone for free.
And they're not listening to those. Yeah, McAfee has said his team can open it up.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
That's who it was.
And I believe he can, because I don't believe that it is a secure... Technically, what they want is they want an operating system that won't delete the data inside after too many attempts. And that's what we've got right now. We've got a very secure operating system that if you try a password so many times, you get locked out and it will delete the data.
I understand it was 10 times.
It's something like that. I really haven't paid that close attention to to those details. There is a very good question, though. The FBI has very intelligent cyber experts. I don't understand how they got into a locked phone situation in the first place. Like they should know that was going to happen. Their business is understanding how this technology works, so they should have known they would have gotten into this. We can't get past this point without Apple's help. They should have been aware of that before they got here. There are more than just McAfee and Apple that would be able to get past the security on this phone. And that's the other thing that's really frustrating in listening to these arguments. Oh, Apple doesn't want to help. They should at least open that phone. And the point is that as soon as they open that phone, they have to make it available to every phone that needs to be opened.
Then New York City came along and said, well, they get it, we want it.
Right. Well, you know, New York has passed that law that says that you can't sell an encrypted phone. Uh-huh. And so that's that right now is getting debated. The logistics of that. Actually, they haven't passed it. They're talking about it right now. They have a piece of legislation up so that if you're a mobile phone, if you're selling mobile phones, you can't sell a mobile phone that doesn't have a back door in it that can't be monitored, which seems like a ridiculous idea for one state, because you could just drive to another state and get your... Sure. And how does it affect interstate commerce when you can go on Amazon and buy a phone from a different state?
That's like Colorado and marijuana.
Yeah. But can you do that on Amazon?
Soon.
It was the iMessages and local data. So that would be like you wrote notes to yourself and stored them on that phone. Your work phone.
Scott, I'm with Chester, but the one thing you don't know, and you don't have to accept this, most people who go to jail smart themselves into jail.
Smart themselves into jail.
They smart themselves in. They do.
Wait.
It's really cheap.
They do.
Okay. I am waiting for you to expand.
Well, the typical crook has a mindset that he is smarter than everybody else.
Okay.
Okay? And that's how they ended up in jail. So to give them credit to use a particular phone that's a work phone, they will do that.
Yeah. Well, and that's where I think it's important to see the kind of data that they don't have already. Because Apple has already provided them with a ridiculous amount of data on this phone.
Yeah.
You know, all photos, documents that are synced up, a full backup of the phone is in the cloud that they've provided the FBI with.
Most of us, when we have problems, it usually comes down to the pilot error. It's your own fault.
Right.
You walk yourself into problems. It's seldom that somebody else causes it.
Operator. Oh, well, everybody doesn't admit to that, though. People don't admit to that. It's always somebody else that causes it.
What?
Yes.
The only issue I have with the Apple position, I love the letter, and I mean, I obviously fall on that side of this argument. I think that we're going to hurt all of ourselves if we allow this one, if we allow a precedence to be set like this. But Apple is Apple, and it's good marketing. And this is I think what they had to evaluate, like 48% want to open the phone versus 52% want it to be secure, and they fell on that side. Because if public opinion was no, I mean, if this was right after 9/11, no, they would have to open that phone. But it's not. We've watched abuse of power over the years with people's information. And so there's a slight hedge towards the people that want us to have secure communication.
Trump wants it open.
Of course, yeah.
He doesn't even understand what it is.
Well, and most of the people making these arguments don't understand what it is.
It's starting to turn political.
Don't we just give it to you and you open it for us and it's...
Is that what I pay you for?
But Gates has come out on the side of the
FBI. That's right. Gates has, just today.
So what do you suppose his motive is?
For supporting... Well, I think it's a difficult issue. If you had a bad guy and you felt like they're protected by this password and that's all you go on, then, of course, I mean, I want the phone open, if that's the case. I mean, who wouldn't? If you've got a bad guy that's resulted in killing people, I would want to know everything about that person. And I feel like Bill Gates is coming from that side of this.
I was thinking when you said it was good PR for Apple, that's what Gates done.
Yeah, no, it could very well be. It could be that they're hedging with this other...
Right. You want to screw the other guy.
Thank you, Pop, because we forget. It's always these two. It's Coke versus Pepsi. It's Apple versus Microsoft. Or it's Apple versus Google. It's... There's always two sides to all. Google's kept their mouth shut. Have you noticed? Google has no opinion. They're like, they're not looking at us right now. They have no idea how much information we have. And we give it to the government all the time willingly. Facebook's the same way. You haven't heard a Facebook opinion, have you? Both those operations were seeded with national services. Facebook was seeded with FBI slush money, and Google was seeded with CIA money, and they have absolutely no advantage to having a foot in this.
Can you prove, can you verify that?
Oh, yeah, yeah, absolutely, yeah.
Through what sources? I never heard that.
You've never heard that before?
No.
Oh, yeah, no. Both the CIA and FBI openly maintain investment venture capital funds to fund technology that they think will help them in the future.
Sure. Why not?
And so they've got startup money that you can apply for. And they and part of the deal, part of the relationship is they keep people on staff in your your business, in your organization, while you're using their money. Eventually both organizations paid off the money. But this is speculation.
You have no way of knowing if you're still employing them.
Well, it's speculation, but I think it's founded in good thought that why would the FBI get out of Facebook?
Sure.
Right? Why would the CIA get out of Google? The whole point was for them not to have to track people's information. This technology would.
And you volunteer a lot of stuff on Facebook that you wouldn't tell the CIA.
Well, even just your searching, Google search.
Oh, yeah.
And I'm sorry, there was a period in my life where I knew the names of the capital venture funds. I knew what year they started, what year they set, because I was way into it. All that eludes me now. I'd have to go back to Wikipedia and start searching it for you again. But it is all out there. All that information is common knowledge. It's open.
God, I'm naive.
Life's too short, right?
It's just the way things are done. It is cheaper to fund a startup like Google at the time than it is to have agents tapping everybody's phones.
Yeah.
It's just it's good use of resources.
Using somebody else to help them out. They don't have to spend money and all.
Well, and it doesn't have to amount to anything. The government pays for all kinds of things that don't amount to anything. We've got bomber jets like that.
Yeah.
That information on Facebook, each day that you go there, there's usually something you've seen before, but it's because somebody else shared it. But that page that you're looking at is almost infinite.
Yes.
What happens to that page? Is there an infinite version of it someplace?
Wait, and I like that you said infinite, because that's actually called infinite scroll. When you're scrolling down a page and it keeps growing and keeps growing and keeps growing, we call that infinite scrolling.
Yeah, if you look at the bar on the side, it goes down and then it bounces back
up. Yeah.
Okay, I've got a question.
Well, hold on a second. Gary, what are you getting at, though? Are you thinking that that's
I'm just wondering if that's stored away somewhere as is, like as it goes by me. Is going somewhere else to be stored?
Well, it's not going somewhere, but it's coming from somewhere. It's a database of all the posts that have been accumulated, and yours are being picked out for you and presented to you. And as you go down, it keeps picking out of the collection that's in there flagged as things you're to see. But it already exists. It's not leaving your page. It's coming to your page. Yeah.
Well, yeah, because sometimes you turn it on, and then you'll get... You'll see the first thing, 35 people have commented on it, and you're thinking, well, this is the first time I'm seeing it. Where's it been?
Yeah.
But my question is, say you go buy something, and then you want to go find it again.
Oh, yeah.
You can't find it
again. What a joke that is, huh?
Yeah.
So unless you save it to your timeline right away that you think you might want it, you're never going to see it again, right?
I've only recently started using that save feature, but you can maintain like what would be the equivalent of a bookmark list of things that you want to go back to in Facebook.
You can
flag things. Yeah, you can flag things to be saved.
But recently I've been getting these pages that say you have memories of this day sometime in the past.
Oh, that's right, yeah.
And you can't get rid of your memory.
Well, you can click the check mark and it'll go away from
that
your
one,
view.
That one, it comes back.
Yeah. Yeah, it's...
Like, some places you can say, I don't want to see these notifications anymore. But that one you can't get rid of. You can only get rid of it temporarily. It just keeps coming back.
Yeah, it would be interesting. So you're saying that you've looked for like a turn off Facebook memories and you can't find it?
Yeah, I can't find it.
That's interesting. I should get a verification on that. Can we turn off Facebook memories?
I'm so happy.
So, okay, Scott, where do you save it that says there's a little tiny upside down, like a V here?
Yeah, the little carrot there.
Save the post. Add this to your saved items.
That's right. So you've got a saved items list. There is a saved items list if you look under the characteristics of your profile, like on the, I think it's the upper right-hand corner, you're looking for something like your saved list. I've seen it. I forget the language of it. I've seen it before.
Saved, right?
Yeah. And so that's a list of the things that you've taken a moment to put. Yeah. And that paradigm is being applied to other things. Like you'll find that in as a reading list for Firefox or Internet Explorer, where you can tag something for your reading list. Safari's got that to read later. And so Facebook has adopted that kind of idea now.
Oh, really?
Because they know they're impossible to search. I mean, they know where everything is. If they need to find something, they can find it just fine. But you, it's ridiculous. I can't find stuff I've posted.
Yeah, I don't want to share everything I see. I want to. You see a video you want to watch, but you don't want to share it, but you'd like to go back to it.
Right? Yeah. Yeah.
The other thing that frustrates me is you're going down your news feed, mm-hmm. and you see something that's interesting, so you click on it. It shoots you off to another Facebook page. Yeah. Now you can't come back to where you were, to the spot you were. If you go return, it takes you back to the top of your newsfeed. It doesn't take you
right
back here.
Right.
And you're 20 minutes down, and you're still stuff down there that you maybe want
you know,
to see.
That's how you end up wasting all your time on Facebook.
It's called clickbait.
Yeah. You're like, I was only coming for 5 minutes, and now I spent 15 minutes trying to get back to where I was.
Exactly.
Yeah. We're also a Facebook support group.
Facebook Anonymous.
Facebook Anonymous. Yeah. Far from it. Facebook not anonymous. We know where you are and what you're doing.
On another note, if I didn't have Facebook, I wouldn't have been able to watch my granddaughter on holidays in Bali swimming when she's a little baby.
That's the way I keep track of my grandkids.
That's how I do that.
Yeah, I put on there, I'm watching you too.
or
yeah, well, not too much fun.
FaceTime is an excellent thing.
How are we doing? We've reached the end of our hour. It feels like we could almost sum up. I do have one other thing. I don't know if I mentioned it last week, but I'll mention it again. I found this cool article on The Verge about the history of the start menu. And I may have mentioned it before, but I didn't get it on the website. So I'll put the link on the website. But it's a fun article. It'll take you through the last 20 years of the Windows start menu. So you can see how it's evolved from Windows 95 all the way up to current. And you can compare and contrast the difference. So it may even help you if you're using Windows 10 or Windows 8 and you're a little confused about what you're looking at. It may even make some sense out of that for you, why you're not seeing the same thing you've seen before. So I'll add that to the post for this podcast, and you'll be able to take a look at that article. I found it really interesting to look at. It's amazing how the things that have stayed the same and the things that have changed. 20 years. Sometimes it's kind of like there's still four wheels on a car.
Yeah, but it's finding those four wheels.
So what is that?
If you go to sccclub.org, later on today or tomorrow, club.org, that's our website for the club.
It's thinking.
And you'll find a recording of what we've done today, and on that I will put a link for the article on the Windows start menu.
Positive attitude.
Yeah.
Except about 11:30 at night, it's like.
Yes.
And they go in all these drawers and just think, that's like
all the time. Oh, I can't do this.
That's
right. Go 5 years from now, kids are going to look at it.
Why did they change
that?
It? It was fine like, the way it was. You know.
What is microfiche?
It still follows a somewhat logical.
Well, This has been the San Carlos Computer Club, and I am Scott Stimson, and I appreciate you guys coming and joining the sharing my time here. Every Tuesday from 9:15 to 10:15, I like it you guys come and spend part of your week with me. Always welcome. Please come back. Hopefully we addressed some of your concerns and made you aware of some others, some new ones. I run a computer shop here in town called International Computer Solutions. If you're looking for computer help, I'd appreciate it if you'd call me. You can call our office at 226-0209, or you can reach us through our webpage at internationalcs.net. You can send me email, scott@internationalcs.net. Also, if you're looking for recordings like this one or any other things that we found interesting in the club, we post them on a blog. The blog can be found at sccclub.org. I guess that's it. I'll wrap it up. Oh, hey, and we meet every Tuesday at Tequila's, so you should come. Come to Tequila's and get something to eat. I get nothing for promoting them, but they're great to us. They give us space for our meeting. They give us free Wi-Fi. They give us good table service. So if you're in San Carlos on a Tuesday, show up like 8:30, do breakfast, stick around for our meeting. You can feed your food and your mind all on a Tuesday, and then screw off the rest of the week. That's it. This is Scott. Tech on. We'll talk to you next week. Goodbye. That's quite.